It's 12:06 and 76 degrees in Santa Fe as At Noon continues from KSFR News on Friday, June 7th. Coming up this hour, the new county courthouse in downtown Santa Fe opens Monday morning. We'll hear from the chief judge about what it brings. We'll put the question of power lines starting forest fires to a member of the Public Regulation Commission. Valerie Espinosa has already begun to raise that issue. And what to do with wild horses, and should they be rounded up at all? I'm Bill Dupuy, back with those stories, 60 Seconds with Christopher Hagen, and more after headlines.
Fire officials say the Thompson Ridge Fire in the Hemis has grown to 14,400 acres, with containment now at 10%. More than 1,000 personnel are on scene, with three air tankers and six helicopters among the resources deployed. The Tres Lagunas Fire west of Pecos is at 10,000 acres, with containment now at 34%. 973 firefighters are on scene there. Meanwhile, FEMA has approved a fire management assistance grant for battling that blaze. The grant provides for paying 75% of costs, with the state paying the remaining 25%. The Democratic Party of Santa Fe is calling for a boycott of Whole Foods stores because two Albuquerque employees were temporarily suspended for speaking Spanish with each other while at work. But there are conflicting comments from Whole Foods about whether or not the action represents company policy. A local Whole Foods manager told KSFR News that there is no such policy, but a regional manager for the company told other media outlets that Whole Foods does require English to be spoken while employees are working. The Martinez administration has overturned another environmental rule. Appointed members of the State Oil and Gas Conservation Commission have replaced some of the requirements in the so-called PIT rule with less restrictive provisions. The New Mexican says they called the previous rule cumbersome for oil and gas developers. The PIT rule was put in place to capture wastewater and sludge in pits lined with plastic to prevent their seeping into the water supply. Southern New Mexico's commercial border zone has been expanded from the current 25 miles to 55 miles. A final ruling was made today by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Mexican nationals who have undergone background, fingerprint, and security checks may receive border crossing cards and will be permitted to travel 55 miles into the U.S. for a period of 30 days without obtaining additional permits. The expansion permits visiting our state's three largest border communities, Las Cruces, Deming, and Lordsburg. Another city councilor has announced a run for mayor of Santa Fe next year. Chris Rivera, a former Santa Fe fire chief, who was elected to his District 3 council seat last year, now joins colleagues Bill Demas and Patty Boucher in vying for the city's top post. Rivera says he will use public financing for his mayoral run, just as he did in running for council. $60,000 is provided by the city for mayoral candidates. New Mexico's two U.S. senators are coming out against the federal government's large-scale spying on Americans that was revealed this week. Senator Tom Udall says the massive collection of phone and internet data is evidence of the reason he voted against the Patriot Act in the first place. Senator Martin Heinrich sits on the Senate Intelligence Committee. He says he's calling on the Obama administration to explain to Americans how the information being collected on them is used. Santa Fe County's new First Judicial District Courthouse on Montezuma Avenue will finally open on Monday, June 10th. The long-delayed opening of the 100,000-square-foot facility comes atop some $25 million in cost overruns from its initial 2005 estimates. Supported by a $25 million voter-approved bond issue, the structure will open without the promised public parking. That was eliminated due to security and safety concerns. Much of the delay was caused by the discovery of decades-old petroleum contamination below the worksite. More delays came late last year with a lack of funding for furnishing the facility. Bernalillo County's Metropolitan Detention Center has today transferred some inmates from its facility to another to alleviate overcrowding. Bernalillo County commissioners voted last month to relocate at least 300 prisoners over the next year at a cost of more than $7 million. The jail has routinely exceeded its 2,200 prisoner capacity and has received federal reprimand. KOB-TV reports that some 49 inmates were moved this morning to the Sandoval County Detention Center. It's the first phase of several to be completed by June of next year. Santa Fe police are asking for the public's help in finding two suspects in an unusual assault and robbery incident Thursday afternoon. A 24-year-old man claims two males with sweaters pulled over their faces attacked him while he was skateboarding around 4 p.m. in the 100 block of Siringo Road. The victim says the men hit him with a cattle prod and kicked him, taking his backpack, wallet, and skateboard. They then fled the scene in an older model black Honda. Pop music star Justin Bieber has just joined the growing list of celebrities who have paid $250,000 to ride into space on a Virgin Galactic flight out of New Mexico's Spaceport America, likely next year. Virgin's Richard Branson congratulated Bieber on his reservation via a Twitter posting. Actors Ashton Kutcher and Leonardo DiCaprio have previously signed up for flights. The city of Santa Fe is changing the vendor it uses for the printing and mailing of water, refuse, and sewer utility bills. During the transition, those customers that receive paper bills are not likely to notice any changes. Paperless customers, however, will, for one or two billing cycles, be receiving printed statements instead. And weather for Santa Fe. Partly sunny today with highs in the upper 70s and a 40% chance for afternoon thundershowers. That decreases to 20% this evening. Both Saturday and Sunday will be warmer with highs in the mid-80s and just a very slight chance for an afternoon shower. By Monday, a dry and hot pattern will establish with highs in the 90s. For KSFR News, this is Dan Garrity.
A pretty good, if not great, jobs report hit the market this morning. 175,000 jobs added to the economy in May, more than what economists had expected. That seems to have perked up Wall Street. Stocks have been up ever since. S&P 500 firmly above 1,600. NASDAQ is up. The Dow Jones ahead, 149 points at 15,189. 12:13 and a half on At Noon. It's been plagued by environmental issues, cost overruns, and more time to complete than expected. But now, the new district courthouse in downtown Santa Fe is set to open up Monday morning. KSFR's Marion Cox spoke with Chief Judge Raymond Ortiz to find out what it offers.
The new courthouse will essentially double the size of the workspace from our existing courthouse, which is now decades old. We will be moving approximately 100 offices and employees to the new building, and the new courthouse will allow for much more expanded court services such as alternative dispute resolution and much more enhanced support for numerous litigants, for example, who represent themselves, who cannot afford a lawyer to represent them. So those are one of the many examples of changes which the new courthouse will allow us.
What areas here in northern New Mexico will be served by this new courthouse?
Well, our district is a three-county district. Of course, it encompasses Santa Fe County, but it also encompasses Rio Rivas County and Los Alamos County. We're one of the largest districts in the state, and in terms of geographical scope, for example, the district reaches as far south as Edgewood, which is a community just outside of Albuquerque on I-40, so we go all the way from on the southern end, Edgewood, all the way up to the Colorado border and as far west as Dulce, for example. So we do serve the three-county area.
What are some of the other things that may not be quite so visible to the general public but are definitely a part of this new, improved, and vastly updated courthouse?
Of course, everybody will be subject to screening, so it's much more enhanced and much more sensitive security equipment, so that provides a measure of security for, of course, members of the general public, as well as for court employees and judicial personnel. There are cameras throughout the entire building, except in the courtrooms themselves. And even in the courtroom, there are some areas of the courtroom that are on security cameras. So, and there's a court area downstairs that's manned by sheriff's deputies, that they have basically complete control and complete visual access of the entire courthouse visually. In terms of transport of prisoners, that's among the most significant improvements. transported by separate secure elevators to holding areas outside of the courtrooms where they're required to appear. And these are elevators only for prisoners and sheriff's deputies. The public will have absolutely no access to those secure elevators. We have areas for the public defenders, and they can meet with their clients as well. So we have much more enhanced conference room capability in this new courthouse. And again, in the old courthouse, it was meeting in the hallway with your clients. So you can imagine how confidentiality could very easily be compromised in that kind of scenario. So we've taken great strides to enhance that ability.
Some people will say that you've faced a number of challenges getting to where we are today. Other people will say there's been a lot of drama involved. But I wondered if you could provide us an update on two issues that we've reported on regularly and that have been really challenges, once again, to get where you are today. One is the status of contamination found under the courthouse during early phases of construction. And secondly, if you could just give us an update on where you are with the purchase of new furnishings and when those furnishings will be finally completed.
In terms of the remediation of the environmental contamination, that remediation has basically been completed. They've taken out all the contaminated soil, all the gas plume, replaced it with new soil. They built an impermeable barrier around the courthouse, and to the extent that any fumes are still percolating up through the soil, they've got a system that will basically capture those and burn them off. So the remediation has been completely addressed. In terms of the new furnishings, the legislature passed and the governor approved funding for approximately $760,000 in new furnishing. That's been appropriated. The money hasn't actually hit our account yet, so we haven't been able to spend it, but as soon as the money hits our checking account, we've already got the furniture isolated, which we need to order, and it will be ordered basically very quickly after the money actually hits our account. We are moving a substantial amount of the existing furniture in the courthouse and our old courthouse from the new as a transitional measure. And so the courthouse is going to be somewhat sparse, as you might imagine, because the new courthouse, as I indicated, is twice the size of our existing courthouse. So even if we were to move all items of furniture, by definition, the courthouse would only be half full. In our first few weeks, the courthouse is going to look a little bit vacant in terms of furnishings, but as soon as, again, the money hits our account, we will be ordering new furnishings, and it will be delivered. Unfortunately, we can't submit the order unless the money is actually in our account. We're going to be fully open for business Monday, June 10th, 8 o'clock in the morning. So right now, we are in the process of moving our entire IT system, all the servers, computers, monitors, and all of the recording equipment. We're moving and reconnecting the phone system. We're moving close to 100 offices and, of course, our employees to the new building, again, as we speak. So we will be shut down, of course, working through the weekend to make sure that we're completely up and running and ready to continue to deliver services to the public Monday mornings. And I might add, the judges in our district and the judiciary as a whole are very grateful for the financing that was made available to build this very beautiful and functional building. We're very grateful to the numerous people who have worked very hard and long to make this new courthouse a reality.
Chief Judge Raymond Ortiz speaking with KSFR's Marion Cox. Courthouse opens on Monday. It seems clear that the cause of both of those wildfires near Santa Fe were power lines hit somehow by trees. That's exactly the cause of the devastating Las Conchas fire of several years ago, a fire that forced the evacuation of the city of Los Alamos and the National Lab. Public Regulation Commissioner Valerie Espinosa has been looking at that issue and joins us on the line. You've already brought up this question before the full PRC.
Well, the reason I brought up the question is because the last three fires appear to have been caused by an overhead power line falling over onto either from private land or whatever the circumstance, but they have been caused by power lines falling over and creating this fire in the last three cases. So I felt that the PRC could get involved in the sense that if we put together a stakeholders group with different players from utilities to, private citizens, we can come up with a solution so we can avoid this from happening again. The PRC, per se, regulates the quality of service that these utilities carry, such as, the co-op. And I mentioned before, rather than point fingers, let's do something together and involve the utility companies to avoid this from happening again. I think the priority is to get the fires put out, then get the U.S. forestry, the state forestry, and all the key players that are responsible, including, the regulators, to take action to require some of these companies to ensure that they have the appropriate easements and that they are following through on their vegetation plan.
The PRC doesn't really regulate this aspect of the utilities, does it?
They don't, but they are responsible, like I said, for providing, quality of service from these utility companies. And therefore, as a stakeholder in all of this, we can certainly hold their feet to the fire to ensure that they do clear the easements and have sufficient easements necessary to avoid, again, this from happening in the future. As a regulator, I can't watch this happen again. I think the last three fires, as I mentioned, have been caused by overhead power lines.
Well, what are you hearing from the utilities? Are they able to do this?
The utilities are very eager. I've gathered so far at least, eight that have confirmed they'd like to work with us, and I'm not done trying to figure out who could be key players in this. Cape Carson Electric has certainly been a model.
Well, one of the issues facing them, though, really, isn't it the width of the easement that they could stand a wider right-of-way?
That's what I think they need right now. According to the Kit Carson, there's a 20-foot easement that is required to keep away from the utility lines. But if you drive through the Pecos Valley in town, you can actually see the trees that connect are almost growing into the power lines. So I think if we take a step forward and act on the requirements that they're required to follow by the PRC, then it's a step towards prevention.
Well, it's going to be a question of money, too. How would they pay for it? Does the state have any funds to help out?
I saw the helicopters, and there are two going back and forth. Those guys are contractors. They are probably charging us in the amount of $8,000 to $10,000 per hour, is what I understand, plus the manpower that's out there, another $100,000, plus the risk of human life.
If you add up all the numbers you just told me, then pretty soon you've got enough money for a real prevention effort, much less suppression.
And that's all I think it takes, is an effort and a joint effort. We don't want our state, to burn up in flames. And then the drought has created, has been a big part of this as well. It doesn't seem like it's getting any better.
Sounds like a new role for the PRC and a needed role at that. Well, Commissioner Valerie Espinosa, many thanks.
Thank you always.
12:25 on at noon from KSFR News. In New Mexico, as well as a number of other states, there are a number of wild horses. It's practice to capture some of them and sell them to the public. Now a national coalition has released a report that says the roundups are not in the best interest of the horses. Suzanne Roy is director of the American Wild Horse Preservation Campaign and told us about the problem.
Well, the problem with them is that they are terribly inhumane, especially when they use helicopters to stampede the horses, sometimes over very difficult terrain, can be up to miles, and then they're stampeded into traps where they're separated, their families are torn apart, and they're thrown onto trailers and sent to holding facilities for the rest of their lives. So very inhumane. The National Academy of Sciences just came out with a report this week that showed concluded definitively that these roundups don't work as a population control method, and in fact they're making the situation worse by keeping wild horses down to these unnaturally low population levels and then going in every couple of years and removing large numbers of horses. They're actually increasing the reproductive rate. And so it just doesn't work. It's cruel, it's inhumane, and now this independent scientific body has said it doesn't work and it's got to change. So we're very pleased with the results of that review.
What are survival rates for horses caught in roundups?
You know, the horses that make it through the process, and there are a lot of horses that die. Some horses die or become injured during the stampede process, but that's a small number of horses. A lot of horses die in the holding facilities in the first couple of years, whether it's from gelding, they take old senior stallions and geld them. There's a high complication and death rate from that. There are young foals who are stampeded or mares who give birth in the holding pens, and there's a high mortality rate for foals. And then there are certain problems that come just from transitioning to captivity. Some horses just give up and stop eating, and they die basically from just malnutrition. So there are a lot of deaths that occur in those first years of captivity. But the horses that make it through that process and make it to long-term holding facilities actually live longer than they would on the range. But they're living in conditions that are not natural for wild horses, so they are not allowed to have any of their natural behaviors, their social behaviors, in terms of having these tightly knit social bands with the stallion and a mare and foals and things like that. They're not allowed to live as wild horses would live. So it's not an ideal situation. And then the other problem with the holding facilities is there is this amendment to the wild horse law that allows the BLM to sell horses for as little as $10 a piece. And while the agency is not supposed to sell to individuals who will sell horses to slaughter, that has happened. And in fact, they were just exposed last year for selling over almost 2,000 horses to someone who is a known kill buyer, who takes horses, buys them in the U.S., and ships them to Mexico for slaughter.
What would be a better tactic to take if not roundups?
The better tactic would be to allow greater numbers of horses to be on the range. What happens right now is that the Bureau of Land Management and the Forest Service only allow a very small token number of horses. In New Mexico, I think legally, according to the Bureau of Land Management and Forest Service rules, not federal law, but they only allow about 350 horses to live in the whole state. And the reason that they do that is they're giving most of the forage to privately owned livestock. Even though this is our public lands, they're giving the forage to privately owned livestock. So that's a problem. So we need larger numbers of horses to preserve their genetic variability and genetic health and preserve them for future generations. And then those larger numbers can be managed. That's the other thing that the National Academy of Sciences report said very clearly, that there is an alternative to the roundups, but it's just not being used, and that is fertility control. There is a vaccine that can be given to mares that will prevent reproduction for a year or 2 years, and it will bring down the growth rates in those areas where we need to do that. And that is available, it's humane, it has minimal impacts on their natural behaviors, and it can be utilized, and it's a lot cheaper than doing these massive roundups and stockpiling of horses. Right today, we have 50,000 horses in holding facilities and fewer than 32,000 horses on the range. So it's a bad situation.
Suzanne Roy of the American Wild Horse Preservation Campaign on At Noon. We're trying a new type of fun drive this summer. Would you join us? It's called a silent fun drive. How can you participate? Return the envelope you may have received in the mail. Donate online safely and securely at ksfr.org or call us at 505-428-1527. It's 24 before 1 o'clock. Here's the old curmudgeon.
There sure seem to be a lot of shenanigans going on in government these days. There's the IRS, never known for its record of fairness and decency, allegedly treating right-wing groups with more severity than others. I say that's wrong. Folks like the Tea Party deserve to be heard. How else are people going to know how stupid they are? Turns out the IRS controversy has more to do with a few rogue offices than a conspiracy above and beyond the IRS's normal arrogance. I think it's the beginning of an early campaign against Hillary Clinton. Then there are the unauthorized leaks. No big deal. I have those all the time. Whoops! So some nervous Nellies thought it would be a good idea to seize phone records of a few reporters from Associated Press and the oxymoron Fox News. That's where I draw the line, because not only did the Justice Department seize those phone records, they have also subpoenaed my brain, which is, of course, by definition, an unauthorized leak. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.